Welcome back to the Teachers on Fire podcast, streaming live almost every Saturday morning at 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Eastern on the Teachers on Fire channel on YouTube. My name is Tim Cavey, and my mission here is to warm your heart, spark your thinking, and ignite your professional practice. Today's Teacher on Fire is Ashley Phillips. Ashley was a high school teacher for several years, but eventually found herself exhausted, burnt out, and in need of a change. Her book, The Teacher's Guide to Changing Careers, will be published in June 2024. You can connect with Ashley on LinkedIn at Ashley Phillips. Ashley, thank you so much for coming on the show today. Are you ready to light it up?
Yeah, absolutely, Tim.
That is so great to hear. I'm glad to have you. It's kind of a bold topic, a bold direction that we're going in this week, but I think it's an important conversation to have. Just a couple of quick housekeeping items as we continue. Number one, I had a rough, you'll notice I have a Band-Aid here on my forehead. If you are joining us on the video version of the show, I apologize for that, but I did have a rough encounter with a pipe in a parking garage this week. So keep an eye out when you're down in those parkades. And secondly, I'll be away from the live stream next Saturday. I'll be at a wedding. So you'll just have to hang in there, teachers, committed Teachers on Fire listeners. I'm so glad for your support. And we've got a hello this morning from Michelle on YouTube. Good morning. She says, hi, Ashley. And hey, it's great to have you with us, Michelle. Thanks for joining us on YouTube. All right, let's start to get into it. Ashley, first of all, share with us about your teaching journey. What was it that convinced you that you needed a change in professional direction?
Yeah, I've thought about it a long time, and it wasn't one thing. I taught in multiple states in the U.S., taught different subjects, all in social studies. I did some facts classes there at the very end. And what I realized, it didn't matter the campus I was at, if it was a charter school, if it was a public school, if it was a socioeconomic wealthy area or not, the problems just seemed to be rampant and systemic throughout. And at the end of 7 years, I was sitting there thinking, this is not getting better. I'm feeling worse at the end of the day. I'm exhausted and I can't financially support myself. So where is this going? And what am I doing with my life? Like, what do I want to do when I wake up in the mornings? And the answer wasn't classroom teaching anymore. And so unfortunately, like, there were a lot of good times. Don't get me wrong. Like, I loved project-based learning. There were so many things that inspired me about the students. I met some and made some really great friends while I was a teacher. But unfortunately, when I sat and assessed, what am I doing? The bad outweighed the good. And it just became very clear that it was time for a change.
I'm curious in that story, and I'm sure we'll get into more of the parts of your experience here in a few moments. But is there anything that your administrators could have done differently to support you in that experience?
You know, so Tim, I don't want to be super hard on anybody because, like I said, I think the issue is systemic. And in my book at the end, I actually interview teachers who have successfully left, but I included an administrator. And it was shocking to me how parallel her experience was, but different just from the administrator perspective. She had the same burnout. She had the same frustrations and stresses. She also felt powerless. Her mental health declined in a major way. And so I don't think it's right to put the pressure on the individual administrator. I think that there are times where administrators are part of the problem. They buy into it. But I also don't want to say why that happens, whether they feel powerless or they're scared of their job security. There might be something else going on with them. But there's also a lot of folks that just shy away from actually standing tall and following procedure and you know, the processes. And so, like, some of the things that stick out was, like, I remember there was some students that cheated. There was a dad that was actually leading the cheating. And in that meeting with the administrator, mom found out and she lit up. She was embarrassed. She was angry at her kids. She was angry at her husband. And then it turned to me. I was the problem as the teacher. I was the youngest person in the room. And the administrator let it happen. And those times of being uncomfortable and needing to put a stop to that, that's hard for any human to do. And so I just think that a lot of times administrators are put in just as tough situations. And like I said, the problem is above the principal in many ways. And so I don't really know that there's anything the principals could have done to help me. There's quite a few examples where they didn't, but, you know, to blanket overgeneralize and say, oh, administrators are the problem, they're not the problem either. It's bigger than they are.
Well, I mean, it's such a complex issue. And I know there are so many different variables, and you've mentioned a few of them, and perhaps we'll talk about more of them as we go. But I'm a part-time administrator, so that's something I'm very interested in. How can we play more of a supportive role in making this field sustainable for teachers? Let's talk about that next. Before we go into some other questions, some other directions, and your current work, do you believe that teaching is still a good path for many educators? And what do you think needs to change to make this space more sustainable?
So it depends on what your definition of educator and teacher is. Because if you wake up in the morning and your passion is to help people and you love to mentor and to coach and to train, there are so many ways to do that that aren't a classroom setting.
Right.
It's just not. There's a lot. You can get into sales training and sales enablement, which is the path I took. There's corporate trainings. There's compliance trainings. There's HR. I mean, there are, you know, thousands of different job titles in corporate America that all lead back to training. It's just, who are you training? And what is the content that you're given, whether it's algebra or a third grade reading program or a compliance training? It's all the same. And I find inspiration in helping people. And so if I help a sales rep be better in training, that means that's a bonus for them. That's commission. That's shoes for the kiddos. That's a vacation. And so I have found motivation in that. I think if you're a young professional, if you're early in your career or even late, or if you're in college, you really should consider, what will my life be like if I take on classroom, public education in elementary or secondary setting? And sadly, like, my answer to him, like, highest level is no. I don't think it's sustainable. And I think that's why we're seeing a mass exodus of teachers. There are teachers that don't speak up. They're afraid. You know, they get their classrooms taken from them. They get the subject they've been teaching for 4 years taken from them. They're then put in kind of an adult hostile environment. Also then on top of it, dealing with the stresses of the job. And so I don't think it's really becoming a sustainable practice for people who love education and teaching. I think that they need to think of other things that they can do. And there are options out there. It's scary for me to say, because I love teaching. I am an advocate for teachers. I wish it was better, but it's not. And I was actually talking with a couple folks that are helping me with this book. I was like, they're like, well, how do we fix this? Like, they're reading my book and they're like, Ashley, like, you're right. My kid's teacher is miserable. And I'm like, I know. And that's why I wrote the book. I want to help them. But how do we fix it? And I said, you know, the more I think on this, I think we need to flip it. We've got the model wrong. Instead of taking a 22-year-old right out of college and giving them the students to teach when they have no experience and they're struggling, like, my boss that I work for today is a whiz with revenue operations. He is one of the sharpest people I've ever worked for. That's who I want teaching my kid business. That's who I want teaching my kid personal finance. And I think of, you know, some of these professionals I've met that are in the law profession. That's who I want teaching government and civics. That's who I want teaching social studies. And so I think that if we're looking for a solution, I don't think it's bad to think, you know, maybe everybody should go into the workforce. And if teaching and inspiring children's your passion, maybe you flip it and you do that later in life. And you do that for the last 10 years of your career. When you're more mature, you can handle the pressures and stresses. Teachers probably respect you more because you're of their age, instead of being 22 and feeling like they can take advantage of you. And so I don't exactly know how to fix it. I know the governments probably play a large role and need to change there. But we could probably rethink the model. But back to the original question, if you're very young, I don't know that that's the field that you pursue if you think that you are an educator and you are a teacher, because there are other options.
I have to walk a delicate line here, as we talked about off air. I mean, a big part of my brand, or all of my brand, is really helping teachers stay on fire and avoid burnout. Mm-hmm. And so I have to believe, maybe some friendly disagreement, I have to believe that there are still some sustainable spaces and ways to make this profession work. But I really appreciate your honesty and your directness on this, and just perhaps we need to be a little bit more candid, a little bit more bold in some of our statements about education. I think it's well reported. it's well known that teaching is incredibly demanding, and all you have to do is hop on social media and see what teacher fatigue looks like. I'm curious, Ashley, before we move on, you've sort of touched on some issues from your experience in the classroom. I'd be curious to hear your take about what are the absolute worst or most demanding parts of the job from going back to your experience. So I'll give you a few: assessment and grading and all of the demands that come with that, lesson planning, buying resources, supervision responsibilities, classroom behavior issues that maybe are not supported well or whatever, phones in the classroom or phones in the schools, staff meetings or faculty meetings that take some of your time. Of all of those issues, and I think you would agree those are probably common complaints that we hear about from teachers, which of those really resonate and say, yep, that one really helped me look for another direction?
I would say the ones that are the policies that parents can understand the most are the ones that are hardest for the admin to be sticklers on. Like, I remember, thank goodness, I mean, I haven't been in the classroom for 10 years, but, you know, at the end, cell phones were a problem. And parents were like, but I'm going to call my child if I have an emergency. And the school was like, well, that's why you call the office. Like, we've had this policy in place for 50 years. And if you need your child, you call us and we'll get a hold of them. And it didn't matter. Like, that was apparently the hill to die on for some parents. And it's like, but why? It's a distraction. Like, don't you think your child needs to be engaged in this room and not on this phone because you think it's so you can get a hold of them, but they're texting their friends and they're on who knows what internet, or, you know, they're on the internet on what website, you know, it's just crazy. And so I think of all of those common complaints, it's whatever ties back to a staunch policy that the parents don't like, and then the administrators waffle on, and the teacher's stuck in the middle, and all they want to do is teach their lesson. And so I think, you know, classroom behavior probably is in that same bucket. You know, there's probably a method, or whether it's, you know, three de-escalation questions, or a check next to your name, or move your paperclip or your clip on your name. All of those are all well and good until the parent and the administrator and the teacher just can't align on which parts of the policy are we going to follow. And so wherever you have fractured rules where we follow some but not others, that's where I think that contention comes from. And that's where those too many of those really start to get at the teacher of like, well, now you're not trusting me as an adult to run my classroom, and you've taken my autonomy, and then now you've taken my power, and the child knows this, and it's going to get worse. So that's kind of where I think it's the most sticky.
That's a great answer, and you give me a lot to think about there, so thank you. Yeah, the phone one is a factor that I hear about a lot, and I see a lot on Education X for sure. Well, I want to, obviously, we're going to talk about your new direction, so I want to start with this. What are some of the skills you have been able to transfer into your current work? How has your quality of life changed? And I realize, Ashley, you may not be able to disclose specific numbers from either of your career trajectories, but we're curious. Of course, we need to know how your current income compares with your teaching salary.
Yeah, this is question number three that I'm asked the most. Like, question number one is, how do you do it? Question number two is, what can I do if I decide to do it? And question three is, tell me about the money. Like, I get it. It happens. And so this is probably a little difficult for teachers to do today. But when I left 10 years ago, I 2.5x my salary, like, immediately. I went from, I was teaching in Central Missouri, even with my coaching stipends, which were pennies on the hour when I did the math. That was part of my, hey, I'm financially strapped. I did the math. But yeah, I went and I 2x'd when you add in my bonuses and my equity and my whole package, not just the salary, very quickly. I think a lot of teachers can either 0.5 to 1x their salary, depending upon how they're paid and where they're teaching today. I think as I've gone and grown through corporate America, and now I'm at what, you know, some might consider an executive level, it's 5 to 6 in salary. And then you have all of the perks and benefits that go along with an executive package as well. And so it's something that I'm very passionate about, helping teachers understand that your job is not your happiness, but your job allows a lifestyle that will make you happy. I was talking to a woman a few weeks ago. She says, Ashley, I can't do it. I can't do the 529 for my kid and the retirement for myself and buy groceries. So who doesn't get invested in? that is a hard reality to look at for teachers. And so if the finance thing is something that intrigues you and you are looking at retirement and thinking, well, teacher retirement's stable, but I'm still going to have to substitute when I'm done, you know, maybe consider thinking about that, right? Like, do the math, right? A side hustle and adding 8 hours to your week is not financial freedom, right? So that's what I'll say about the money is I would say your future will get better. Your happiness isn't your job, but your job will provide a lifestyle that could make you happy.
Then also talk about the skills part, because I think a lot of teachers sort of worry that, oh, all I can do is teach. What else could I possibly do? And I think you make the case in your book that, hey, you have a lot of highly developed skills that are transferable.
Yes. Yes. I'll make it clear. Like, I am not anti-teacher. Like, I am anti how teachers are treated in the education system, right? I'm very much for teachers. And I will say, this is part of my favorite conversation to have with teachers who ask me, because I hope that they leave as inspired and excited as I am. I will say, what, if you actually ask, like, Ashley, what did you have as a teacher that got you that first job? Hands down, it was my tech skills. And I am not tech savvy in the way that people in high tech are tech savvy, but I was good enough. And honestly, it was the LMS. It was being able to understand how to get people logged in, how to manage my user lists and my classroom, the students that were in it, how to upload content on it, how to assign it, how to grade it. Now, because of COVID, folks know online grade books, they know online attendance, they know some sort of video streaming capability, they have an online classroom. And I'll tell you, like, teachers, like, you have more tech skills than you understand. Like, and that should excite you and make you feel like pleased as punch. Yeah, I'm serious. Like, when I look at going to hire people for proposal managers, I've got to teach them usually proposal sites. But a teacher's like, oh, I've seen a simplistic, easy UI to use. Like, and they can step in a lot quicker. And so I want to make teachers feel confident that the tech skills are there. But I mean, my goodness, you talk about soft skills, like, teachers have them in spades. I mean, whether it's relationship building, de-escalation, being flexible, your tech goes out, like, I'm not sweating, you know, if I was anybody else, I might be profusely sweating. It happens. And so you can be flexible. But those checks for understanding, I mean, I'll tell you a really, really quick story. My very first job out, another thing, I was uploading content about OSHA compliance training. It was a government document. It was like 10 pages and 10 point font. There were no images. I was like, this is horrible. Like, I don't even want to read this. There's no way the installers are going to read this. And so it was one of those things. I actually went to my leaders and I was like, hey, do you know that the reading level of this document is like at a collegiate level? And a lot of the people that were serving with this training have a high school degree. And then they came and worked for us. And that's wonderful. But they are not going to comprehend this. And so that was another skill, like, immediately within months that I'm using, saying, hey, these people are not going to be able to comprehend this. And it's for their safety. It's our job as a company to make them safe. And I was heard on that. And it was pretty cool. And so I actually helped them break down the content in a way that was at the reading and skill level of our audience. And so teachers can do that, right? Teachers understand that. And that was pretty exciting to understand for myself and realize. And that's what I'm trying to get other teachers to understand, that they are marketable, way marketable beyond the classroom.
So great. And then the last part of that, I don't want to miss this either. How's your quality of life changed? You've sort of touched on this a little bit, but speak to the difference in stress and sleep.
Oh, well, the sleep is there. I'll tell you that. I mean, work is work, though. I also have to remind teachers of that, too. Like, work is work. Like, whether it's your job, like, there's always going to be personality differences. There's always going to be projects that you really don't like. You know, that's part of, that's why they pay you, right? So you just got to be happy with the amount you're getting paid, right? And if you're not, make some changes. But I do sleep at night, but I only sleep at night. I'm not sleeping at 4 p.m. on the couch till I crawl to bed at 8:30 to then try and sleep all night, right? So that's a big difference of, like, I have energy when I leave work. I have time to go to the gym or go on a walk or go grocery shopping without just being utterly exhausted. And that's been a nice, healthy change in my life. And like I said, I mean, I make enough money now. I'm blessed. My husband and I, we can go on vacation. And number one, it's not, well, then what am I cutting out because I want to finally go? I'm able to go without thinking about it. I can plan properly. I'm not nervous about the school being angry. I'm taking time off. I don't have to do sub plans. It's not, oh, I'm a week behind in my job now when I show up. Like, I have a team. I prep before I go out. They cover it. It happens. I go, I come back. Then it's their turn. They go, they come back, right? And so you just talk about the flow of work, yeah, there's still stress. Yeah, there's still days that are not great. But in the grand scheme of things, like I said, I'm not exhausted and I'm not burnout. I'm able to take a break when I need one, a mental health day, a vacation day, go to the doctor in the middle of the day, get my tires rotated in the middle of the day, all those things that teachers struggle with in their scheduling, like that went away. And it felt incredible when it happened, Tim. Those first couple years, I definitely appreciated it more than I do now. I forget. And this conversation you asking me is a good reminder because it's pretty great.
There is no such thing, or pardon me, there's no tired like teacher tired. There we go. That's what I wanted to get out. Yes. And that's a real thing. Yes, sir. I do believe that. And I heard the other day that public speaking for an hour is the equivalent to working in a cubicle or an office job for 8 hours. I don't know what the science is behind that, but I do know that public speaking must be some kind of parallel between that and operating in the classroom, hearing your name called 200 times and addressing a lot of different people throughout the course of a day. So there's no question that teaching takes a toll, physically speaking. And I think any teacher can relate to that, particularly in the younger grades. Well, thank you for joining us, Teachers on Fire. I know this is a different kind of conversation. We're being brave today and looking at some spaces that we don't always look at. But if you are getting value here, would you give this video a like wherever you are catching it? And if you are listening, if you are tuning in on the audio only experience, be sure to subscribe to the podcast. Ashley, what are 1 to 2 life lessons you've gleaned from this transition? What have you learned about yourself?
Yeah, I love a good self-reflection, Tim. I think it helps in so many ways. I would say one of the things that I fall back on if I find myself, you know, kind of stuck in something is I go back to the phrase, nothing changes if nothing changes. And so I do, you know, whether I talk to teachers, like I was chatting with a woman on LinkedIn the other day and she just kept saying like, but I have to move back in my parents. I'm losing my apartment. And I'd give her advice. And then she'd go back to losing her apartment and moving in with her parents because she couldn't afford it. And I'm trying to help her get beyond that. And she's just stuck there. And I feel like a lot of teachers get stuck there. I used to go to happy hours, you know, and the complaints would be the same. And I talk to teachers who are transitioned now and they say, I met up with my old group of teacher friends and it was wild. It was like Groundhog Day. It was the same, complaints, same issues, same problems, just new names. And I want to encourage you that if you're in that, do some self-reflection, because whether it's about your job, your relationship, anything in your life, if you find yourself just constantly harping on the same points that are negative and you feel powerless, I'll tell you, nothing changes if nothing changes. And so the second piece of advice that I've had to learn in this career change is you've got to be bold. You know, whether you got to pull a Steph Curry and do some breathing exercises to quell that anxiety so you can make that shot, you know, that's the game on the line. You got to do the breathing exercise. You have to find a way to quell the anxiety and you've got to be bold. But I will tell you, nothing changes if nothing changes.
Ashley, let's talk about the negative stigma that is sometimes associated with leaving the classroom. I know that's something that you address in your book. What is that like? What is to it? And how can educators frame it or overcome it?
I want to let teachers know that we self-impose that. It's more of a primary and secondary education issue, the stigma of leaving. As soon as I get out, at first I was afraid to tell people I used to be a teacher because I thought, you know, they're going to assume that I'm not good enough. They're going to assume, oh, because there's that nasty adage, like those who can't do teach, you know, and there's all kind of these poo-poo on teachers. And so I used to be embarrassed, but I would tell people and they're like, oh, that's incredible. Yeah, teachers are the best because, and everybody has a good story. Some people have bad stories, but I think people are all awfully impressed and also very admirable to the profession. And a lot of people are like, well, kudos to you for giving part of your life to that, because people do know that teachers are important and they're actually quite excited. Now, they follow that up with, well, hey, my sister, my significant other, my whatever, they're a teacher and they complain all the time. Would you talk to them? And so that's why I said nothing changes if nothing changes. But I do think that the stigma is more so with education and putting it on ourselves. Now, you do have to learn the language of business to get out of teaching. They're not going to learn teacher jargon. You're going to have to say, instead of state standards, you're going to have to learn key performance indicator. But I'm here to tell you, it's literally the same thing. It's a standard of measurement that you go back to. And so as a teacher, if you can learn the language of business, people will not knock you for having a former career. They really won't.
Talk about the Teacher's Guide to Changing Careers, your book set to be published shortly here in a couple of months, I understand. Who is this book for, Ashley, and what can teachers expect to take away from it?
Yeah, this book is for, again, anybody that's in teaching, that whether you thought of it right now as you're signing your contract, whether you think of it daily, whether you were like, I got to get out yesterday and I don't have a plan and I don't know how and I feel really stuck. The book runs the gamut. It hits that spectrum. And if you get a copy, one thing that I hope that you are able to do is get through the first couple chapters, because it's self-reflection. It's about you. And it's, is this the right move for you? And it's okay to think, you know what, it is better than I thought it was. And I need to stop complaining because this is really good and this is a good fit for me. But you'll go through the journey of figuring out, is leaving the right thing to do? And if it is, what should you do while you're in the classroom to make that happen? The second part, the next couple chapters go through, answers the question, well, what can I do? It's what are jobs are available? What are those transferable skills? What are the companies and the industries that I should look into that will make me feel good about this work? And then it's crafting the story. It's how do you say, hey, I've hit my ceiling teaching and I'm really excited for a new opportunity. It's finding out how you say that in your own words and why. And then the last part is the prep. It's the networking and the outreach and getting ready for those interviews. And it's putting that plan that you've created previously in the book to work so that you can make that change that you want.
So great. It sounds interesting. I'm not looking to leave the classroom just yet, but I am interested to hear your thoughts there. I want to say hello to Amanda, who's joining us on YouTube. Good to see you, Amanda. And Elizabeth Murphy, good morning to you as well. So great to have you joining us live. And on that note, if you are enjoying this conversation, consider adding the Teachers on Fire YouTube channel to your morning commute. Start your day on fire, teachers. Ashley, outside of education or your current work, we could say, what's another area of learning for you? What is it that has ignited your passion since leaving the classroom and really brought you alive as a human being?
Yeah, I'd say it. I have a twofold answer. One is professional, because I do love work. I find a lot of satisfaction in projects to completion. And although I do that in my personal life, house project feels great, but that's hard labor. I like to do work projects. And so I've loved the opportunity since leaving teaching to learn more about business. And recently it's been in digital transformation of manufacturing. I think it's a core industry that our country needs, and there's a lot of great jobs there. And so I've been learning more and more about manufacturing and upskilling of employees in that realm. And that's been really cool, because it's a new kind of teaching, right? It's just a new audience. It's a new subject, but it's still teaching. And so that's been really fun for me to dive in and learn more there. But the other thing, you know, Tim, you talk about lifestyle change, you know, because I'm not grading papers on Wednesday night from 8 to midnight or whatever, because I have 150 projects to burn through. I've been mentoring a lot of teachers, and it's really fun for me. It's not something that I've monetized. It's something that I really plan on monetizing. But it is really cool to have a career conversation with somebody and watch the light bulb go on. Like I said, I'm a teacher at heart, right? And so I've found other ways to do that. And so there's even a couple of folks that I'm working with that are not teachers that want a career pivot, because there's so many parallels of how do you market yourself and tell that story. And so really what lights me up is still teaching. It just looks very different, whether it's, you know, industry based for economic reasons, or whether it's just mentoring teachers and others to help them live the life that they want. I think everyone deserves to be happy, and I want to make sure that folks know that and have some support.
That's just it. And I mean, I'm wrestling through this conversation as an administrator and thinking, don't take my best teachers. Don't discourage teachers from leaving the classroom. But on the other hand, I will say this. I'm a firm believer in teachers being in the classroom because they want to be. And I think when and where you have teachers who are miserable and feel like I'm dreading coming into work every day and I don't like my life, but I'm only here because I feel like I have to be. Well, we have to do better than that. We do, because that's not serving colleagues or students very well either. It's not serving the person well who's in that position. So I don't think we should be complacent and accept that existence when we do find it, when we do hear about it. And for that reason, I appreciate your role of mentorship. That sounds like some really good conversations, important ones to have. We're moving into some lightning round questions, Ashley, so I'll put a few quick ones to you. Can you share about, well, this one may not be actually lightning fast, but we'll see how you do on this one. Share about one personal habit or productivity hack that contributes to your success and keeps your fire burning.
I actually try not to multitask anymore. I find that trying to do too many things at once, it just gets all muddled and messed up. And so I don't have anything fancy. Like, I know you can like color code your calendar and there's like ways to like block your time. I haven't looked into it that much, but I do know that I've tried to cut out multitasking. And one of the things I'll say with working remote is I've tried to be really diligent about like, what is my working hours and when am I on and off? And yeah, I might take a break in the middle of the day and put in a load of laundry and eat lunch. But I'm going to say like, if I'm going to work, I'm going to work. And then if I'm going to not work, I'm going to not work. And I'm going to invest in my family or myself or whatever I'm doing. And so I've really tried to cut out, as I've gotten older, cutting out multitasking and being really focused and intentional on what am I using this time for, and then giving it my all. So that has actually helped me complete a lot of stuff, because multitasking, you just kind of pivot. And then at the end of the day, you're like, oh, I didn't do that. And you wake up in the middle of the night. So I've tried to cut back on trying to do too much all at once.
Tell us about one person that we should follow on LinkedIn and share why they've been inspiring you lately.
So on LinkedIn, there is not one single person in enablement that I would follow. But I would encourage you, if you have a niche or an interest, to follow many thought leaders. So that way you can be really dynamic in what you pull from yourself. And that way, you know, whatever I bring to work, I've got other people and examples that are doing the same things. And so I would say, number one, I would just follow as many people as you can that are thought leaders in an area you care about. When you talk about me getting this book done, because it's been a labor of love, I quit teaching in 2015 and I started taking notes in early 2016. And I was like, this is wild. I got to write this down. When I started that, what's really made the difference was I was reading, Justin Welsh posted something. He's a solopreneur, and I don't pay for any of his services or subscribe, but I get a lot of value out of what he puts on Twitter and on LinkedIn. And he talked about the power of like the coach and investing in yourself. And that's really what inspired me to actually invest my time and money into getting this book published. And so he's somebody I follow very much. And the third person I think you should follow is Sam Jacobs. He wrote a book called Kind Folks Finish First. And it really inspired my husband and I with some of the work that we do. And it's a fantastic read, and it'll, again, a lot of self-reflection of kind of stumbling through your career, not being intentional, not knowing what you're doing or why, and having kind of the wrong motivations. And I've learned a lot from him. So between Justin Welsh and Sam Jacobs, I've learned the most of being about an entrepreneur and investing in yourself and being a business owner. But like I said, cast a wide net when it comes to thought leaders and a topic that you care about, so you can be very dynamic in your understanding of it.
So good. I'm a fan of Justin Welsh as well. And I think I subscribed to his newsletter. So yeah, he's creating some great stuff. And just those I know you're not on X, but he's a force there as well. Recommend one book, Ashley, one that you've been reading lately, or perhaps one of your all-time faves, and tell us why you recommend it.
Well, yeah, I gave you one of them that I really liked, Kind Folks Finish First. That's been a more recent one. Right. But early on in my career, I read a lot of books about female leaders, because the one thing that is tricky still in the corporate world is the number of males to females when it comes to being in business meetings. And I had a lot of imposter syndrome just with being a teacher. And then it's like imposter syndrome when you're the only woman in a room, and it's can be uncomfortable and unnerving. And even if everybody in the room is great, it's still different. Like, you're still the one, right? And I think a lot of people can relate to that. And so I actually read a lot of books. I read Sheryl Sandberg's Lean In. I read Reshma Sanjari, I think is how you pronounce her name. I read Brave Not Perfect early on. I recently read Pay Up. And so I read a lot of books about leadership, because it's important to me to be a good leader. I think that's a very big responsibility if you're awarded that. And so I want to be a good leader, but I also am looking for perspectives from female leaders. And so I try and make sure that I've invested early on in books like that and make sure I carry those tips in. And they really, really have helped.
Those are some great picks. On the subject of podcasts and as a support to my work here, who is one educator or speaker? I know your head is no longer in the education space primarily, but is there a speaker or another thought leader in addition to the ones you've already mentioned who you would recommend I interview here on the Teachers on Fire podcast?
You know, when it comes to education, I can't say that I follow it too much anymore. I did write, I can tell you one of the things that I still use all the time. It's here on my bookshelf. I'm looking now. It's Teach Like a Champion. And it's those 50 different, tips. I call them training tips now, but they're teaching techniques. And I still use them all the time. And it doesn't matter if it was a room of 14-year-olds or now it's a room of, 30 and 40-something-year-olds. Wait time is incredible. And I still do it. right? And right is right. I still do it. You know, they can't kind of get the information about the product right. You can't kind of almost get there when you talk to a client. You have to be sure and right and true in your answer. And so there's still a lot of those techniques. So anybody that's done a lot, and I know that book, I don't want to date myself. I think that book's rather old. But if you know of anybody that's doing anything, I think there's like even a version 3 of it now, but I would recommend anybody with that because I think that book is very powerful. And I wish that they would create a corporate version of it because I think it would be really helpful.
Just for fun, what are you streaming during your downtime right now? We're not as serious here on this question. I know what I'm streaming. Well, I'll just tell you, my wife and I are into a series on Netflix called The Physical 100. But what have you been streaming lately?
We've been watching Lioness.
Okay.
That's what's going on in our household.
And which platform is that on? I'm not familiar with that one.
You know, I don't know because we subscribe to all of them, and that's sure. That's a financial issue that I need you're calling okay. me out on that I need to look at. But I don't know which one. Paramount, maybe. Paramount Plus, I think.
we all have some hard decisions in that yeah. category. It's a weird space because more and more people are cutting cable, but then in exchange mm-hmm. we have all these different streaming platforms yeah. to sort through. Ashley, thank you so much for sharing today and working through some technical challenges yeah. over there. I really appreciate you sticking around. What are the best ways for the Teachers on Fire listening to follow you? And again, I'm going to say for probably the third or fourth time, it's not my mission in this conversation to encourage any teachers to leave the classroom. But on the other hand, if you are feeling stuck, if you are feeling miserable, like you're dreading your current situation, we do want to help you. We want to support you and help you find that change. And Ashley might be the voice to help you do exactly that. So Ashley, how can the listeners connect with you?
Yeah, this week, Tim, I made a bunch of social medias and I'm just getting them ramped up. So it's on Instagram at Teaching Career Change. Instagram is at Teacher's Guide to Changing Careers. It's the same on Facebook. But mostly I do a lot of my work out of LinkedIn. I'm trying to get teachers on a professional platform. I'll be posting on the other two. But LinkedIn and just mind the spelling of my last name, but you'll see me there and connecting with me there is probably the best. But Tim, I do, before I hand the mic back to you, I do want to second your sentiment of we do need good teachers. Mm-hmm. And if you are happy and inspired and you thrive in that career, like I'm elated. Our society right. needs it. And so I'm really glad that you cover a lot of those good topics. But yeah, if you are unhappy, that's not who we want in the classroom, to your point earlier. And so if right. you do need help, like I hope this brings you a solution. And the answer, maybe you decide to stay, and that's okay too. But you owe it to yourself to think about, is this right for me? Am I doing the right thing staying?
Yeah, absolutely. Sounds good, Ashley. Again, I want to thank you so much for sharing your time with the podcast today. This has been fun and enlightening, yeah. and I've been a little bit scared going into kind of a taboo area for Teachers on Fire, but I think it's been good. It's been helpful and healthy to have this conversation. Teachers on Fire, I'm your host, Tim Cavey, and again, I'm so grateful that you decided to spend some of your day listening to this podcast. If you enjoyed the content you heard today from Ashley, make sure to connect with her on LinkedIn. As she just mentioned, that's where she's spending a lot of her time. In the meantime, keep sparking your own thinking and igniting your practice. And I'll meet you not next week, but the week after, right here on the Teachers on Fire podcast. Take care, everyone. Bye-bye.